Hello, everybody. Happy New Year to those I haven't wished yet. And today we are going to ruin your childhood once more because apparently we're really good at that. Let's go. All right, everybody. This is Rolf from Alter Universe, the podcast, with another fun episode coming at you now. And I've been on a kick of throwbacks because, you know, getting old, got to relive our childhood somehow. So we've been putting together some fun may not be the right word, but we'll see what you guys think. Of course, we can never do these videos alone, so we got to get our best buddies and nerds in on this. So my buddy from the North, hopefully that wasn't a rude comment to say, we got Alex Austin from Ronin Podcast. Say hello, sir.
Hey, how's it going?
Very good. And as we said earlier before we got on, Happy New Year to you and yours.
Oh, ditto.
So, so as you guys heard from the introduction here, we're going to do some throwback chat again. And we've been going over a lot of stuff here at Alt Universe, whether it was old shows that we grew up with that ended up being really creepy now that we're older, or in this case, old school rides that we may or may not have been on, and just a little about them and why they may have, why they cease to exist, shall I say, anymore. Starting off, these are going to be two Disney park features. I didn't realize the second one was actually at Disney World, but, you live, you learn, right? So we're going to jump right in. First off, we're going to do one that really takes us back and out of the country, too. We're going to talk about Cinderella Castle Mystery Tour. So just to be clear for those out there, this was more of a walkthrough and less of a ride. Could that be, in your opinion, one reason why it was probably taken down because it wasn't an actual ride?
Yeah, man, I had to go and read up on this one in particular. Obviously, this was at Tokyo Disneyland.
Right.
It was featured there starting in 1986, so it goes quite far back. I think it was loosely based on the Black Cauldron and Fantasia. In fact, it had scenes ranging from all of those, including more familiar characters and princesses, including Snow White, I think, is one of the pictures that you could see in there, one of the interactive pictures, and of course, Black Cauldron. So it kind of went all over the place, but it's widely regarded as one of the scariest attractions within any Disney resort. So, and of course, it was Disneyland Japan. So I suspect, yeah, the fact that it was an attraction and maybe one that became outdated could be one of the reasons why it was officially closed down, I think, in 2006.
Right. And since then, I don't really know of many walkthroughs anymore in any of the theme parks, whether it's Disney, Universal, anything. Universal Studios does have the tram tour, which to me is kind of like a walkthrough because you're basically taking the car through the sets of the films. The difference, I think, versus something like this versus the tram tour is usually updated with newer films, right? So there's always something new to see. As you mentioned, this is really based off the Black Cauldron, which was a older Disney film. It reminds a little of the Haunted Mansion before you get on the ride. Is that a fair assessment, you think, with all the visual kind of creepy?
Yeah, I mean, the Haunted Mansion is definitely meant to be a little bit more accessible, I feel like, sort of tongue-in-cheek that, you're sort of haunted ghost house and there's ghosts dancing around and dining and you see them in the mirrors and the pictures and everything. And it's actually a pretty brilliant attraction. It is a ride in the sense of a ride. You're just not swooping up and down these crazy corridors. But it does, there is some thrills where it gets dark and ghosts start popping out on you and things like that. It is definitely probably nowhere near as scary, though, as this Cinderella attraction was at Japanese Disneyland.
Yeah, I was going to say, looking at it now, I mean, it would probably be more creepy now for us than it would as a kid. Like, just some of the images, and if you guys haven't seen it, I think there's on YouTube, somebody kind of basically videoed the walkthrough and see what it looked like. And watching it, it was really messed up, just to say that.
Well, do you remember the Chernabog scene from Fantasia? So it was when the sort of demon lord Chernabog is summoning all the demons from his cauldron. It actually features that scene in the walkthrough. So it's very
I was gonna say they do a lot of that's one of the main scenes they have, and basically it feels like the point of this entire game, if you want to call it, was to basically see if you can make it through the dungeon without, you know, being caught by the bad guys. And one of those bad guys, as you just mentioned, Chernabog, of course, the evil witch, actually Maleficent, I believe, is the main one. Yeah.
Yes.
So it seems like it had a right idea. Unfortunately, I think being in the 80s, it may have been a little too early for people, maybe. It went to 2006, which I guess says something. That's what, 20 years if I did math right. So maybe there was something there. Do you think if they were to, I'm not saying they should, but if they were to revive this in a certain way, do you think it would be popular, or do you think it's kind of way past its time at this point?
Yeah, funny you say that. Actually, I think if they were to incorporate more recent Disney villains into it, given the fact that Disney is willing to produce darker content now, I look at the Maleficent films as an example of this. The Maleficent films are definitely a little bit darker. So I feel like now they'd almost have more access to that tone, or they'd have more attendees interested in experiencing something with that tone than they did back in the 80s or 90s. So I think it would actually work better now for audiences.
Okay, that's a fair statement. I always tell people, I wouldn't pay the extravagant amount of money to go to Disneyland right now, because it's like $150 for a day pass. But if there was a way to maybe put some of these rides or attractions in another area that may be a little cheaper to get to, I would definitely be down to check it out. It's just, for me, I guess the question would be, is it worth paying all that money to check out a couple of these things if they were to revamp them?
Yeah, interesting you say that, because now at Tokyo Disneyland in the 1980s, how the park operated was based on ticket books. So you'd purchase a ticket book that would have different classes of tickets based on the rides that were available. So the tickets range from like A to, I believe, E, in terms of how great the ride was considered to be. So rides that were an A ticket were considered to be fairly mundane, and thus you'd have more of those tickets, and they were fairly cheap to replace. And then the tickets that were D and E rides would be considered the primary attractions of the park. So the Cinderella's Mystery Tour actually fell under the D category, so it was one of the top attractions within the park. It was actually situated in the back of the Cinderella's Castle replica that was in the park at the time. So I think since then it's probably been renovated and updated and all these things. So I suspect it's still similar looking, but this particular attraction is now gone. And then I guess what would happen is, this is interesting, they would attract you to the ride, and unless you were a Westerner, they didn't really give you an explicit warning that this attraction would be one of the more terrifying ones. Apparently, if you were just a Japanese national, they wouldn't really worry too much about it. There was no disclaimer going into it, similar to other scary rides, that this could be disturbing to some viewers.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Really interesting. And so they would just sort of attract people to it. And like I said, there was no real warning that, hey, what you're about to experience, could be disturbing, particularly for children, right? But I think in Japan, though, they tend to have a thicker skin. Just looking at, for instance, like Miyazaki films and things like that, it's quite a bit of a different take on family and kids movies than what we have here in the States.
True. It's funny because my girlfriend and I watch those all the time, and it's silly, but it's actually very well done. And of course, Miyazaki, if we're going to use an example, definitely focuses on a lot of serious issues in the world. So
totally.
Their idea of a family movie basically teaching the kids and the whatever to, don't be bad, be nice to everything. So it's an interesting comparison there. And I think you're right. I think, because Disneyland is what? There's Japan, there's in France or Paris. I think there's Euro Disney, or there was Euro Disney. So I think each of them, those places, has their own frame of what is good and not, I guess. But yeah, I think in today's type of world, I think you'd want to, with all the disclaimers out there, you'd want to make sure that something like this was at least slightly caveated. While it may not be scary, you may have some issue just in case. So just in case you don't like anything, don't go through this.
If this thing rolled out in North America, man, it would have been panned so hard because of particularly the scene with Chernabog and the summoning of his minions. This definitely would have been played off by park goers, by some park goers, as being like sort of a cult or you know, sort of satanic ritual related. People tend to skew things one way or the other if they don't understand it. And I think it would have gone very poorly for that attraction if it had been released in the U.S.
You make a very valid point there, sir. I will have to agree with you on that. All right, so before we move on to the next one, if you guys are interested in learning more, you can check out Disney.com, the Disney Wikipedia page. It has a whole list of pictures and videos. And of course, like I said, if you go on YouTube and type in the Cinderella Castle Mystery Tour, there's some videos that basically were shot through it, so you'll be able to kind of get a bird's eye view of what it's like. And if you guys do that, go ahead, come back to this podcast afterwards, comment below, let us know what you think about it. All right, so moving from one creepy to another. And in this case, the second creepy may have been okay for the character that it was about. That being said, he is a beloved character, so I don't really know what their thought process was. And thank you, sir, for scaring the hell out of me again, for making me look this up. I will never forgive you for that. just kidding. So we're going to look at the extraterrestrial alien encounter. Say that five times fast. Did they not think this through when they named these things? I mean, you know.
This came from a wacky time in Disney history. So
you know, they probably there didn't think anything, it through. Many words we can use. Wacky is probably the cleanest one right now. So as we know, this is based off the E.T. movie, which I'm sure everybody out there has seen. If not, go watch it. It's classic. And fun factoid, if you guys were watching, I believe, one of the music awards lately, they actually had a new commercial with Elliot grown up where E.T. comes back to visit him. So it was pretty cool. Go check it out. So, all right. So this was placed in Tomorrowland for obvious reasons there. Open in 94. Or I'm sorry, officially opened in 95 and then closed in 2003. So I guess before we go into it, this what's interesting to me is it's an Amblin Steven Spielberg franchise. I don't know if Steven Spielberg's associated with Disney at all, considering what he's doing with Apple now. So was this kind of one of those oddball choices where Disney didn't own it, but they figured we'll pay enough money to get E.T. in our
It's actually heavily influenced by George Lucas's Lucasfilm at the time. So because Lucas had already been working with Disney on the Indiana Jones attraction at Disney World Orlando. And so this ended up becoming in large part a result of George Lucas. Now, interestingly, George Lucas was actually not entirely for the opening of this ride at Disney World. So how the history says it happened is basically Michael Eisner takes over Disney in 1994. He's not an extremely popular character within the Disney ecosystem. And one of the first things he seeks to do is revamp Tomorrowland into New Tomorrowland. So this is an attraction, a part of the theme park that existed since 1953 or so in its original format. And they end up transforming the Mission to Mars attraction into this extraterrestrial alien encounters interaction. Now, here's the crazy thing. At the time, Disney was actually in talks to produce an alien film, and Michael Eisner was a huge fan of that series and wanted to be involved in it. So I think that's what inspired him to seek out the creation of this ride against better judgment. So the Imagineers believe it or not, actually originally enlisted George Lucas to try and stop Michael Eisner from making extraterrestrial because they thought it went against the park's family theme. So interestingly, it was almost DOA, and somehow they convinced him to go forward with it. They convinced Lucas to go forward with it, likely from a big payday, or because he wanted to make it, responsibly and with the right effects if they were going to do it. But this is heavily regarded as the most horrific and terror-inducing Disney attraction of all time.
Which, on the flip side, you had the E.T. ride at Universal Studios. That was probably the weirdest ride, if not very simple and kind of tame.
Yeah. In fact, this ride, I saw this attraction.
You did? Okay.
Yeah. So in 1996, I was there. And so it was about 1 year old at that point, the attraction itself. But I was there with my family. My kid brother would have been 6 years old at the time. And they said the height restriction on that was 48 inches, but I don't recall that because he ended up going with us into it. And he almost didn't make it through because it's oh, pretty horrific. I think that it's supposed to be like one of these 4D experiences, right? So in the center of the main attraction is basically an animatronic alien that appears in sort of this green mist, and these lights are flashing and sort of an auditorium setting. There is a little bit of a setup for the story when you walk in. Apparently they're going to, I can't remember who they're supposed to warp somebody in from somewhere and transport them into this tube into the center of a room. So you kind of get the backstory as you head in.
But once right, you sit down, which we're going to go over in a little bit, yes. But so, okay, yeah. So obviously, I mean, it was a while ago when you went on it. Do you remember anything about it, or was
oh,
it?
Oh, I remember all of it.
Oh, you remember? Okay, okay. So without giving anything away yet, was it a, like a, you know, 10 out of 10, or was it like a, what the hell did I just sit through?
Oh, for me, it was a 10 out of 10. So, because I was just getting into Star Wars at that time. I was 12 years old, and I was just, I was over the moon about it. My kid brother was not exactly as happy about it. He was terrified.
As you said from the beginning there.
it's one of the few times in my childhood I remember him just being hysterical, dude. Like, he was, it took a while to calm him down, and I think some food afterwards.
You're like, you owe me lots of therapy for this afterwards.
Well, you know, he became a doctor, so I guess it worked out for him in the long run, but
okay, that's fair. Okay, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, so now the perfect segue into how it goes. So we're going to break it down kind of how it works. So it looks like before you even got in, you were ushered into an area. There was basically the Tomorrowland Interplanetary Convention Center, which is, you know, famous, their fancy way of just spoofing up their area there. You got to see all of this equipment being in there. And we'll get into the voices, because I'm actually surprised the voices they had. They're actually huge names, so we're going to save that for a minute. So, you know, the voices would talk to you and basically tell you about what's happening and about the show. Before the start of the pre-show, television would come on, and you would get all of these, you know, I'm reading some of the things here. The Tomorrowland Chamber of Commerce presents XS Tech. We had Mission to Mars, History or Hoax. So they definitely were playing off of their other stuff, right? They were using what they had, and they were, you know, they were adding to it to make it more thematic, I guess. That's probably a safe way to say.
Yeah.
The second pre-show area, guests were proceeded to the area where they're introduced to a robot named Sir, for short, and originally called Tom. Sir stands for Simulated Intelligence Robotics, and Tom was Technobotic Oratorical Mechanism. Whatever, sure. Leave it to Disney, right? yeah, I have no idea. So, you know, so it was more of the same. A lot of the characters talk to you, and this is kind of like a lot of places do, a lot of things do it now, like the Simpsons ride. They have all the TVs on, so you get to watch the cartoon while you wait. The other E.T. ride, it had clips from the movie. So this is nothing, I don't think it was anything new, right? This was more or less, general speaking, theme parks did this to kind of keep you busy while you were waiting to get onto the actual whatever it was.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It was like an auditorium that they ushered you into, and they'd sit you down, and I'm pretty sure there was even something that came down over your shoulder, similar to a theme park ride, like a roller coaster type ride.
And right, actually, yeah. So the next part basically was, when you finally get into there, they put you in basically I don't know, kind of like when you get on a roller coaster almost, like those yeah. harnesses. And basically they put you in, you know, you get in there. I believe there was some movement, right? And basically everything kind of goes dark, and there's loud noise and stuff. And you're basically, you know, you're supposed to assume that this thing like got out, and you're like, oh my God, I'm going to get eaten by the alien.
Well, yeah, yeah. It's wild. So like, now first off, we should mention too, because you mentioned the big names. Did you want me to shout them out? The voices of Sir and Tom.
Give me a second, because I actually want to put him down another section, because there's a whole bunch of names that were on here, so I kind of want to put them all together.
It's trippy, yeah. But anyway, when you're sitting in the attraction, so basically the alien shows up. It's an animatronic, and there's a lot of mist and everything and flashing lights. And the intercom is going, and the intercom is basically the voice of whoever is operating this teleport system saying, oh, something has gone wrong. this isn't right. And then this alien shows up, and then and it's fairly comedic too. Like, there's little one-liners and quips as they go through it. Then alien breaks out. And for all intents and purposes, it looks like the glass has been broken. The alien is out. It's running around in the auditorium, in the dark auditorium. In fact, it's pitch black for a good portion of it with just some flashing lights. And the seats are designed to shake and rumble when the alien passes by. They're designed to spray water on your face when the alien is spraying its poison or whatever. And then it's also designed to blow hot air on the back of your neck when the alien is supposed to be behind you and breathing. It's freaking crazy, man.
So I was gonna ask, so as far as the special effects and stuff go, I mean, it wasn't really ahead of its time, but it was still pretty cool for the time, right? It was
really cool for its time. In fact, so this is 1996. I was there. So this is just a year and a half or so after, like, you know, the release of Jurassic Park, and I'm just getting into Star Wars. So I'm right into this. Like, this is right up my alley as a 12-year-old. I was having so much fun. And it was brilliant. So as a 4D experience, I think the right age range was probably like the 12 to 16 or 17 age range. Like, that was like, if you were that age,
right,
you were probably loving this.
Right, exactly. Okay, so it looks, and then, so just a quick little fact before we get to the other stuff. It looks like, and I'm not sure when this is going to be made, but it looked like this was going to be part of a project called Tomorrowland 2055 that was going to actually have some other famous rides as well. But it looks like, so it looks like it was going to be done in Disneyland Paris. So this wasn't going to be here. So, you know, so it looked, so obviously this held some sort of court for a while with them, and to the point where, I mean, even you remember it from a kid and you're still talking about it. So obviously this is something that they did well and maybe shouldn't have gotten taken down, but I'm sure with all the new stuff coming, you know, and the acquisitions or whatever, they probably made deals with everybody saying, okay, fine, we're going to take out the old stuff and give you the new space here. Case in point, when they got Marvel, I know they took down a bunch of stuff so they could put all the Marvel rides up because they promised them, we're going to give you this entire area to do Marvel.
Right.
So, you know, it would have been, you know, I bet you if Disneyland Paris, because it looks like it was due to money problems, but it looks like if they were able to get it up, I bet you people would have flown to Paris to go ride it again. Just because it seems like it was a pretty badass type of show. Or type of ride, I'm sorry. So, you know, and then really fast, actually, and then this kind of goes to what you're talking about the alien movie that he wanted to make. It looks like the original concept was going to be more related to that franchise than the E.T. thing. So we'll just take a quick second on this one. How do you think it would have been any different, or do you think it's just as scary this way as opposed to if it was the actual aliens from Alien?
Yeah, I think there was ultimately in Orlando, there was an alien at Universal Studios Orlando. There was actually an encounter that took you through various movie scenes. And I think it ended on a recreation of the battle between Ripley and the Xenomorph from the original Alien movie. So I think that did make its way into an attraction in Orlando at some point. And I think it was beloved. I think people liked that one well enough. What was cool about this one, though, is by far, this was the most, mature attraction within the Disney ecosystem in Orlando at the time. So for me as a kid seeing it, I was like blown away. It was like my favorite thing from the whole Disneyland thing. So it was Disney World thing, rather. It was really cool, though. I fully enjoyed it.
But how do you really feel about it? Okay, now, what we've been waiting for. So I'll hand this over to you since you were so eager. Let's name off some of these big names that were voiced throughout the entire show. So take it away.
I just learned this today when I was reading about it, and I had no idea. But Tim Curry was actually the voice of the robot Sir, Simulated Intelligence Robotics, and the late Phil Hartman, was the voice of Technobotic Oratorical Mechanism. Phil Hartman, of course, was an SNL regular back in the early 90s, and starred with Sinbad in the movie Houseguest, which was freaking brilliant, one of the funniest movies ever made. And if you don't know Phil Hartman, you got to go watch that movie Houseguest with Sinbad. It's a phenomenal film, one of my top 10 comedy films ever made. I highly recommend it, and I absolutely love Phil Hartman. So I'm blown away that he was one of the voices in this attraction. And on top of that, in fact, one of the tech employees, I guess his name was Spinlock. I didn't know that, but he was actually played by Kevin Pollak. Kevin Pollak, you would know actually from, I think most recently, he's a Marvelous Miss Maisel, which is an award-winning series, I think on Amazon. Is that correct?
Yeah, I believe it's on Prime, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And anyway, it's just a lot of names kind of in there. Did I miss anyone super important?
Well, so we also had Kathy Najimy, who everybody knows from Hocus Pocus and Sister Act.
Oh, right. Okay.
We also had Jeffrey Jones, who people would probably know best for Ferris Bueller's Day Off, as well as Beetlejuice. And then he came back into the picture for Deadwood. I didn't watch Deadwood, but I know that was a big show. And then lastly, and weirdly enough, because I did not expect her, Tyra Banks.
What?
America's Got Talent host, obviously Next Top Model, all that stuff. So they had a good chunk of people, which is weird because at this point, most of the shows on TV or the whatever, the voice acting usually wasn't done by big names, really. So the fact that Disney, I mean, it is Disney, so I guess I shouldn't be too surprised, but the fact that they pulled off, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 big people right there, that's pretty cool. I mean,
wow. Yeah, I mean, so it kind of goes along with the Disney theme of big budget productions, right? These guys, they really pull all the stops whenever they put together a new attraction to try and make it the most exciting experience. I think it's well in line with the Disney ethos.
Exactly. So next, we're going to talk about some other versions and references and other attractions. So I'm actually doing a video on this one later on called about Disney Quest, which was Walt Disney World's kind of resort that didn't work out very well. But apparently,
I got to do that actually a couple years ago for the first time, the year before it closed.
See, this is why I want you on these shows, because you have all the inside, you know. You have the first person.
Cool. Disney Quest was cool, man. It was pretty wild.
So did you see the game then there when you were there?
Yes. Wait, which one?
So, well, because it looked like that in Disney Quest, there was a version of the ride called Invasion, an extraterrestrial alien encounter. And it was one of the games that was in Disney Quest.
I'm not sure. I don't know if it would have been, because they had different kinds of games there. They had fully interactive games where you're in like sort of a, I wouldn't say a VR experience, but it's sort of like a room with a lot of screens around you and things happening, like the pirate ship battle.
Okay.
And then they also had classic arcade style games in there as well. I don't recall seeing this particular one when I was there, but again, I was there in 2017. It might have already been gone by then.
Fair enough. Secondly, other versions of it, we have the stage show of Stitch's Supersonic Celebration. The Stitch ride actually took over this one before it went out of service. References the XS tech to kind of weave everything together. So, you know, back to, like you said, Disney being Disney and kind of trying to blend everything together into one thing. It looks like we also get some footage that was once used on Space Mountain in the queue, in the lines. So that's kind of neat, I guess. It says used to, so my guess is it probably been taken off a long time ago. So if anybody goes there now, don't expect to see it because it's probably long gone. of course, like we said a second ago, Stitch's Great Escape took over. But I actually read, because I was reading up on this one too, they kind of kept a lot of the stuff because it already was Alien. They didn't really need to fix anything, so they kind of just, all they really did was kind of relabeled everything to more Lilo and Stitch stuff, and a lot of the props were pretty much still there. So,
that makes sense.
Because since Stitch is an alien, he escapes, they figured it's all the same deal. Who cares if it's E.T. or Stitch? They're just going to put everything in one, and, you know, there you go. And then lastly, and this is a newer ride, the Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout, there is a paper invoice from the XS tech in the office of the collector. So just a little funny little, you know, shout out there. which at that point, I think it's kind of a little overkill because you go into Guardians of the Galaxy expecting Guardians of the Galaxy. I wouldn't really be on the lookout for anything from an E.T. ride personally. So I don't know. But it is kind of funny, you know.
That's funny.
It is, it is. All right, so if you guys want to learn more about this, of course, you know, check out, look up ET Extraterrestrial Ride. Wikipedia has a bunch of stuff. It has its own, website, I believe. And of course, go to, you know, if you go look up the Disney Archive stuff, Lost Media, it'll all be up there as well. And of course, as I said before, go check out YouTube, because there's always somebody who has a first-person view of parts of the ride, at least. And with that, I hope you had fun with me, sir. I had a great time chatting with you again.
Yeah, it was great. I fully enjoyed getting to look this up again and kind of re-experience the extraterrestrial, at least. And then, of course, the Cinderella's Mystery Tour was an interesting way to kind of experience Japanese Disney World. I had no idea that that was a thing at the time, but it's pretty wild. Pretty wild.
There you go. We shock ourselves every day as nerds. So before we sign off here, I always like to give you guys a chance to shout out yourselves. So what do you guys have set up for January?
Yeah, we actually have a couple new episodes out. We've recently experimented with more of a political and media topic than we normally cover, but it was just a brief experiment, just a shorter episode than we normally do. So that just released last week. And then soon we'll be doing just regular topics again, including we're having a friend of the podcast to actually explain all of the mods that are available for Skyrim, and she's a big part of the modding community there. So it'll be fun to kind of talk about a little bit of a throwback topic to Skyrim and the current mod community that exists around it. And that's how January's looking so far.
Sounds like a plan. I will definitely link you up on all that stuff. And of course, I will get your main podcast link so people can go find you and listen to all your past episodes as well. Over on my side, we got some stuff going on as well. We're trying to set up some live events down here. When the weather gets a little nicer, it's still kind of cold. I hate the cold. Go away. That was my rant for the moment. Other than that, we have episodes out every Monday. This past Monday, we did a couple with Black Girls Do Stuff Too, as well as my buddy from Geek Freaks. So we will definitely have you, sir, back on very soon. I think I got you on the next couple weeks, probably. And until then, everybody, you know what to do. Stay nerdy.